WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, very Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome to Monday Night Talk. We almost didn't make it in quietly, because we have a room full of people. We're expecting
rowdy.
It's going to be rowdy all night. We'll start first by introducing my co-host, Richard Rosen.
Good evening, Kevin, and how are you?
How are you, sir?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, you get a round of applause.
Well, you know, as well I should with the amount of food that I brought in.
You gave him half a pizza. That's why he's clapping. I mean.
He's a good boy.
And, of course, we're expecting any moment. Is she on? No, okay. We're waiting for State Representative Allison Sullivan. She'll be joining us for half a moment to chat with us about a press conference they had today. And then following that, we'll do a little bit of traffic. And then we have State Representative Josh Cutler in studio with Megan Driscoll Greenstein. And it was funny, is this, I connected the dots. Actually, I had a chance to meet Megan last week.
You did?
As my other source of employment. We were up pointing cameras at the Representative Cutler and Representative Sullivan, oddly enough.
Yes.
As it was a day up on the Hill. And it so happens that Megan was there.
I also had a day up in the Hill.
She had quite the day up on the Hill, which was fantastic. And we made the connection that that you and I know somebody who actually has done work at this radio station and has actually been on this radio program. She was on this radio program a couple of different times when we've been down at the Kingston Council on Aging.
Oh, yeah, she's a big guru there.
Yes,
we're talking about... She's a guru now in Hanover.
We're talking about Marilyn Greenstein, who...
Is my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law. And it so happens that she is in a similar capacity up in Hanover.
Correct.
And we're already plotting our return to the Hanover Council on Aging, which is going to be fantastic. So
she would like for you to be there, I'm sure.
Yeah, and she's very instrumental. She loves the author series, a lot of conversations. But the reason why you're here, we're going to talk a little bit about wage transparency and a bill that has been filed and is in the works. We'll find out how far it is. We'll do that, and we'll also speak with Richard. It's about time for an update about talking about not only McGuigan's Pub, as he brought some great pizza and some apps from McGuigan's Pub, because we never want to forget McGuigan's. That was the original, but we also want to keep in mind the patio.
That's correct.
At McGuigan's. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I was actually there yesterday enjoying the open air ambience of your restaurant. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But right now, joining us on the phone line, 7th Plymouth District State Rep, Allison Sullivan, Representative. Well, welcome for a quick visit to Monday Night Talk.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
So you had a big press conference today. If you will, give us the details of the press conference. This is big news.
So it was actually my first press conference since getting elected. Is in regards to non-disclosure agreements and the use of taxpayer dollars with settlements that have a non-disclosure or silencing agreement attached to them.
And what's the idea behind this bill?
So the idea is that we want to bring light to the way taxpayer funds are being used. We want it to be that there's more transparency here in the government, but also that non-disclosures are not being abused in silencing victims that feel as though they can't speak out on what's going on with them, and hiding perpetrators behind these non-disclosure agreements.
And I believe that you weren't alone. You actually had the state senator Diane DeZoglio.
Yeah, Diana DeZoglio. Yeah, she's great. She's taking the lead on this. This is her bill. that it all started with. She herself has been a proponent of a non-disclosure agreement when she was a staffer in the State House. So she's pretty much has a very personal tie to this legislation.
If you will give us any examples that you can think of or that you've been brought to your attention that became a part of the formation of this bill?
So I know that from talking with Senator Zaglio, it's in regards to she felt as though she was being a victim of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct in the House when she was a staffer. When she was asked to leave the House in her employment, she was forced into a non-disclosure agreement in order to obtain her severance package. So the whole point is that she didn't feel as though she should have had to sign that, but in order to get the severance package, that's what she had to do. She was, you know, a young 20-year-old in her early 20s, not really having any guidance on what to do. And because it was a job that she had, she needed to pay her bills. She took the severance package, and with doing so, she had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which barred her from discussing what she endured while as a staffer at the State House.
And so is this legislation that's in the works?
Yep, so she filed it this session. Her and I both testified in front of the judiciary in regards to this legislation. We're trying to ban the practice of non-disclosure agreements and attaching a settlement to them within the public sector. We are not saying that if a person is victimized of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct, that they don't have the ability to obtain a non-disclosure agreement. It's just that we wouldn't be using taxpayer funds in regards to those non-disclosure agreements. So I'm asking that we have more transparency. I think it's a right of the public to know where and how their taxpayer dollars are being spent. And currently, right now, the way it is we don't know how much these settlement agreements are going for and where they're being spent and how many non-disclosures attached to them. We've uncovered since Diana DeSaglio has come forward with her own personal experience, there have been 33 non-disclosure agreements since 2012. But we don't know the amount attached to those non-disclosure agreements. And that's something that I think we should, and the public should know. And there should be that transparency therein.
And just do one last quick question. What kind of support is this bill drawing?
I think it's, you know, I think with both of us out here and having these conversations, it's getting the talking going and the conversation going. I think over time we will get more and more support as we go when they understand what our intentions are. We're not here to try to out anyone or try to name anybody or embarrass anybody. We're just trying to have more transparency in state government.
And if folks want to find out more about the legislation, how can they do that?
They can go on the website. There's a lot of information. The language there is located on the website. It's the Senate Bill 929. Diana DeSaglio is the one who actually filed the legislation. I believe it's also on my website. If not, I will make sure that that language is posted on my website, so they're more than welcome to read the actual print of the legislation.
We want to thank you, and we're looking forward to having an extended conversation with you next week.
Yes, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You got it. There she is, Representative Allison Sullivan joining us, and we shift gears from talking with Representative Sullivan to finding out what's happening out on the roadways, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop. Online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. And awaiting us is Lisa DeMilo. What's happening out on the highways and byways, Lisa?
Well, Kevin, the expressway southbound, of course, it's inching along from the tunnel to South Bay. You get some running room. You're back in it from Squanum Street to the split. Northbound's a good clean shot all the way in from Braintree. Route 3 South is stop and go from Braintree down to Derby Street. Heading off Cape Boy, the Sagamore Bridge is backed up 2 miles. The Bourne is delay free. Route 24 South is tied up from 93 down through Avon and down past 495. And Route 44 is good. This report is sponsored by Positive Coaching Alliance. Questions about youth or high school sports? Positive Coaching Alliance can help. PCA, a national nonprofit organization, develops better athletes and better people through youth and high school sports. Info at positivecoach.org. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Listen, we at Brennan's Smoke Shop know that you're a smart consumer. We at Brennan's Smoke Shop understand why you would mail order your cigars. It's a lot less expensive, even after postage and handling. Never mind the exorbitant mass excise tax of 40% looking at 70%. But I'll have you know that I'm up on Beacon Hill lobbying for less discriminatory taxes and regulations. And I would like to thank all of our loyal customers for giving me the opportunity to stand up for your, my, everyone's rights, freedoms, and liberties. Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back. Again, you are listening to the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Thanks to Representative Sullivan for joining us for a few moments. And coming up later this hour, Richard Rosen will join us. I mean, he's in studio, he'll be part of the conversation, but he gets exclusivity, per se. Talk about the latest that's going on with his establishments.
I just think with the amount of food that you shake me down for every month, I should get exclusivity.
I'll have to second that, Rich, you know, because I brought nothing to the table. No food, no pizza. Richard brought all this food.
He brings the food, and it's a conversation piece.
That's true.
It was delicious.
The bad news is I had the cheese.
It was delicious.
Thank you. See that?
The bad news is that these four hungry fire chiefs coming in later,
there'd be nothing for them.
They'll still eat it. They'll eat it, even if it's
cold. Did you bring something favorite
cold
pizza's
good.
It is good. Hmm. Did you bring something special for Chief Greno, knowing that?
I did, actually.
Did you really? No. What did you bring him?
I can't say it on the air.
Oh, okay. It's good to know. So we have Representative Cutler here.
Good evening.
6th Plymouth District.
Great to be here.
As we teased
Tagging
earlier.
In.
It was great having you, seeing you up at the State House, and Megan. Before we jump into...
We've got to introduce our special guest here.
Special guest. I almost think she could have, talked without you, but I felt that you guys were dynamic.
I think you're absolutely right.
Seeing the video of the two of you talking
about it. I have no issue talking without Josh, but it was nice to talk with Josh, always.
Before we roll into the wage transparency bill... you actually have some news in regards to the town of Duxbury. I know you kind of poo-poo it, but weren't you a member of the Duxbury Board of Selectmen?
No, I was on the Duxbury Planning Board.
Planning Board.
I was actually on the Board of Selectmen in the town of Hull.
Hull. Okay.
In my younger days, yes.
How many members were on that board?
That was actually a 5-member board.
Okay.
And the Duxbury Board currently is a 3-member board. And the news is that because town meeting voted to request an expansion to 5 members, that goes through us at the State House, and that bill passed the House today, in fact. So, breaking news. You can put the breaking news beep, 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 beep thing on.
When does that go into effect? Is this something that...
So, that still needs to pass the Senate, which we're already working with Senator O'Connor's office on. I don't see any problem there. And then, you know, obviously get signed by the governor. So, you know, later this session, later this year. It'll happen.
Didn't it used to be 5?
It's never been 5 that I'm aware of. Yeah. So, this was something that came as a request of the town meeting members. So, we're acting on their behalf.
Okay. Yeah. And what's even more interesting, and I don't know if this is something that happened recently, but the town of Hanson, in regards to recalls, was that something?
That was another home rule bill. Yeah, we have lots. We keep busy with home rule bills. Our towns keep us busy, which is good. That's good.
And that passed
the House as well.
Well, we know. When did that pass the House?
That was just within the last month. Yes. So that's over in the Senate already, working with Senator Brady's office on that one.
Yeah, because we know during a recent town meeting that the whole recall issue was a big deal in the town of Hanson, because we've seen members who have been recalled and folks wanted to make it a little bit more stringent as to how someone is recalled.
Yes, and that passed the Hanson town meeting, and so it came to me and to us, and we have taken steps to enact the will of the voters.
So digressing back to the Duxbury thing,
yes.
If it passes the Senate, the governor signs it. How soon will
So there's one more step, Kevin, because folks in Duxbury wanted to have this particular process, there will be a ballot vote. So once it is passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, there has to be a ballot vote by the citizens of Duxbury, and then it would go into final effect, and that would take place over staggered time. So it still would take a little bit of time here.
Okay. So before we view our movie... Please
yes.
make sure you silence your phones.
I just want for the record, that was not me. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus.
It was me.
That was not me.
Sorry. I have to say I'm a little disappointed. I thought you were going to tell us about the birds. Are the birds flown away? Or
piping
the
clovers.
Beach opening?
Oh, the piping
is
clovers.
Still a term?
Yes.
You
know, don't try to put the piping clovers
said,
on me,
when
man.
When you said are they endangered? Duxbury, that's really what people want to know. They don't really care are about the five selectmen, Josh. I'm sorry.
I know. They care about the five piping clovers.
They care about the five piping clovers that are still there.
I know.
Well, it's a tie between that and shark sightings.
Sharks.
Yeah. No, I don't know if it's a tie.
There were 17 shark sightings this week,
I think there's many more people very wanting to know about the five piping plovers and having them move on.
I would agree. I didn't buy a beach sticker this year because I knew this was going to be.
Yeah. I heard. We'll see.
So a little bit more than a year ago, Megan Driscoll Greenstein, you wrote an opinion piece for the Patriot Ledger. This was May 18th, 2018. It's time to make pay equity a reality. Talk us through the article.
Yeah, so it's funny that you pulled that up because I had kind of forgotten that I had written that. But I wrote that prior to the existing pay equity law going into place. So this kind of all came up around that time where I own a recruiting firm, so we were trying to implement the new law across our clients that are not only just in Massachusetts, but all over the country, and trying to figure out how we were going to manage that. I was asked to say something or two about that. I wrote that article, and that actually is the article that kind of got me invested in making a real change, not just talking about it, but actually doing something about it.
It's noteworthy. You're the CEO of Pharmalogics. Recruiting in Quincy?
Yeah, I'm the founder now and CEO emeritus because I have passed on the CEO-ship to my second in command. So I have a little bit more time on my hands, which is kind of nice.
Why is wage discrepancy still a thing in 2019?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask. Why is it? One of the things that I think, if you kind of go back to the beginnings of how this all got started, it was sort of a law, a federal law, that women be paid 25% less after the war, and they were trying to get, they basically didn't want women to take the jobs of men who've left for war. And interestingly enough, that 25% pay gap has sort of stayed in place always. And that's just comparatively white women to white men. Latinas, African American women earn actually far less. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of the reasons that people give put the blame on the woman. A woman would choose to take lesser pay, would choose more flexible hours, doesn't want as much responsibility. There's a lot of reasons why we are where we are, and ones that are familial choices. But I think we can make wages more transparent, and in doing so, that begins a conversation about why there's a pay inequity. I mean, for example, with the recent news with the women's national soccer team, the entire reason why they even have a claim at all is because they know they're paid unfairly. And in most corporations, greater than 90 to 95% of companies, they don't publish that data. We don't know that we're paid less. So really what we're trying to do is sort of unmask the problem so that people can understand how it is at each of their own individual companies and why there's a discrepancy and start having that conversation. That's what this bill is all about, to kind of just open it up so that we can start making changes. Because I don't think, and I think Josh feels this way too, I mean, men and women, men don't want to be paid more for the same job. Women certainly don't want to be paid less for the same job, but men definitely don't want it either. So I think we're kind of all aligned that this is an issue and we need to fix it.
So how did you come to meet Megan, Representative?
I have known Megan for a long time. I remember her dad when he owned the video store in Duxbury. Was a great local family, and I'd known Megan's husband, and they both contribute a lot to the community. And so when she came to me with this idea, I wanted to learn more. And she is a powerful, very convincing person, as you can tell if you spend any amount of time with her. And she very quickly convinced me how important this issue was, and then we needed to take action. And so we did. And so I'm a very big believer in this issue, but also a big believer in what Megan's doing.
If I can read this paragraph. Although women received the right to vote in 1919, in 1935, the National Recovery Act required women who held jobs with the government to receive 25% less pay than men with the same jobs. Even when the political winds of fairness began to blow, starting with the 1963 Equal Pay Act, and then soon after Lyndon B. Johnson's executive order requiring equal employment opportunities for all, not much really changed. And so here we are, 25 years later, with women still earning roughly 25% less. And according to this statement, it was 2018, we should be outraged.
I think so. You know, and one of the things, too, even going back to before we started working on this bill and long before this, my company's been on the fastest-growing private companies, Inc. 5000 fastest-growing private companies for the last 6 years straight. And that list never changes. It's only always less than 900 of those 5,000 companies are owned and operated by female CEOs. And so, you know, the first year I was on that list, 6 years ago, I was outraged. You know, how is it that that list never changes? Why are women either not choosing, not being promoted, don't have the leadership opportunities? Why are all of these things happening? And I believe it comes down to wages. If I earned as much as my husband did always, then the conversation wouldn't always just be that I'll stay home with those children. It would be a broader conversation because now it always makes sense for the person who earns less money to stay home with their kids. Always. It's always going to make sense for that to happen. And if that's always a woman, then those choices are very easy to make. I mean, so I think wages is kind of where it all begins. We have to be paid fairly in order for us to make what's right, the right familial choice.
So, Representative, what does Bill 3963, what will it seek to do?
Sure, yeah. So, I think it's important. First of all, I think it's important to update folks. You know, Massachusetts, we can be proud that last year we did pass a landmark gender pay equity law that does, for the first time, take some really major strides forward. And that kind of got this conversation started, and I think is what led, in fact, to this legislation. So, you know, we've had this great conversation about pay equity, and people are asking the tough questions now. And so, you know, we're still seeing only sort of baby steps, I would say. And so this legislation is aimed at sort of taking the next step forward, Kevin, because we all know that, you know, a lot of folks are not moving jobs, you know, every year. And so really some of the prior legislation really only helped when you're changing jobs. And so a lot of folks, we're staying at the same position for year upon year. We want to see what we're doing to try to change that wage gap, get rid of that wage gap in that situation. So the bill, again, and really Megan does the best job of explaining it and is the best job of advocating for it. We just seek to ensure that when folks, upon reasonable request, can get a pay range for a particular position. So they'll know if they are, you know, being paid fairly in comparison to what the particular range is for that position, whether they're applying for a new job or they're at a current job and wanting to make sure that their peers aren't maybe in a different pay range than they are.
Go ahead, Richie.
So I don't disagree with most of this, but my question is, so I think you might have just answered it. You're not saying, like, if someone comes to me for a job, they're not asking me what that person is actually making, because that to me would be extremely unfair.
No, absolutely not. And so
could you just explain how that works?
Yeah, so this is, and I'll let Megan jump in, but just two things to clarify. One is, we're absolutely not saying that, and this law would only apply to companies that are 50 employees or larger, and the reason is there's some good reasons behind that. Those are the employees that already have to adhere to the FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act laws, and those are companies, when you get to that level, you already have a human resources department, and so you have practices and regulations in place already. You know, if you're running a small business, and I know you're not such a small business guy, Richard, anymore, but you run an impressive business. But, you know, if you're running a small business, you don't necessarily have the ability to do that. You don't have multiple people at different pay ranges and so forth. So this is only for larger employers, which is where the big problem is.
And it's just you need to say what the range is.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, so at
which makes sense. I mean, which is fair.
And I think what we're talking, so the existing law right now basically prevents an employer from asking a prospective employee who's applying for a role what their salary currently is. We can only currently in Massachusetts ask what a potential employee's expectations are. So that was the existing pay equity law that's in place now. And it's fantastic, it's got the ball rolling, but less than 5% of the population changes jobs every year. So we're not really moving the ball forward for existing employees. So this law would allow an existing employee to ask their employer, what is the range for the job that I'm currently in? And what women will find out is that they're earning probably at the lower end of that range. But what that will allow for is for that employee to have a conversation with their employer about, okay, if I'm at 62 and the range is 60 to 80, how do I get to 70?
Right.
What do I need to do to further my wages within this range? So it's opening up a conversation,
which is not unreasonable.
Again, we're speaking with Megan Driscoll-Greenstein and State Representative Josh Cutler Probably one of the last couple of questions I'll ask on this, and I thank you both for coming in and having this conversation. Depending on how it goes, maybe we have you back and have an expanded.
Oh, it's going to go well.
Oh, it's going to go okay.
Don't you worry about that.
I think you're seeking to be a co-host with Richie one
day. Oh, I'm telling you, I have things I want to talk about.
Okay,
I want Megan behind all of my bills because that's out. She gets things done.
Where do things stand with this bill at this moment? Where is it?
So the bill was filed just actually
June.
At the end of last month. So it's before the Labor and Workforce Development Committee, and we're waiting for a hearing date, and that'll be the first sort of major step along the process.
How do you feel about that, Megan?
I mean, I'm excited about this. You know, I think that the existing law was just the beginning, and I feel as though people want change, and I think this is really broad. I think it helps. I think it's going to help a lot of not just women, but minorities start having a conversation about how it is that we got here, and let's make a move forward. Let's make wages more fair.
I'm going to ask you this, and I know it's going to be a silly question, but you know what? There's always opposition to something. Have you seen any opposition? Anybody asked? Yeah, again, like when it was brought up, $15 an hour for minimum wage,
and
there was opposition to that. Is there any opposition to this at this particular?
Josh time? Was my biggest opposition. You should have heard how hard I had to work to get him on board. He asked me because you know we wanted to make sure this wasn't going to negatively impact small businesses.
He was vetting it out.
Yeah, and again, that's why we've aligned it with FMLA and sort of a larger size businesses who already have policies in place. And honestly, that's a benefit for them. One of the things that we found out in this process of gaining support, meeting with the Attorney General's office, meeting with the existing people who've written the law that's in place now, is that the current law does cause a lot of confusion for employers because now they have this expectation, but they don't know if that's real. So a lot of prospective employees call in and say, how do I find out what the job pays? So this law actually is an answer to some of the questions that are brought up by the existing law. So we've heard that from a few people. So now what we're really trying to do is just talk about the law or the bill. It's not a law. It's going to be. I'm already thinking ahead. But really talking to the business community and trying to get businesses to support this and be on board.
But buddy, any. Knowing that this we're going to...
So, I think that's exactly right. You know, one of the... we know that some of the, advocates who represent larger businesses, they may have questions about this, just as I did before I learned more about the issue. And so we've already started that process. In fact, some of the folks, the groups that I would think might be concerned about it, we've already met with them, and we're already talking to them. So we're shining a light on and reaching out to the folks who would be impacted to make sure that they're on board and they understand. And that process is really, starting, but we're already getting great feedback.
How has it done regarding legislative support?
Oh, terrific. Yeah, we had a great bipartisan group of legislators that
jumped
that
right
co-sponsor.
On board.
Yeah, great to have a lot of the colleagues down here on the South Shore that supported it, obviously.
Yeah.
And even though this is something that we filed later in the session, so typically didn't have the full amount of time to get co-sponsorship, but we still had a really good, strong group of folks behind it. So really good. I think, and I know we were running out of time, but Megan has talked about the whole women's national soccer team and the talk about pay equity.
Yeah, I think she during the TV interview we did, she actually
I think it's
a shout out to a local girl,
Sam.
That's
Samantha.
Right. Well, we have to give a shout out to Sam Mewis of Hanson.
Talk to me.
By the way, we had a viewing party for the last game at McGuigan's, the patio.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
That's fantastic.
We're hoping to get her on the show.
We're hoping to bring her up to the State House, too.
We're hoping to get her on the show.
Listen, I'm going to come to the show when she comes. I'm going to come to the State House when she comes. I'm going to talk to her a lot. I'm going to talk to her about this a lot.
But to think the fact that the women's soccer team brought in more revenue than the men and they don't make as much money is absolutely outrageous.
Welcome to the United States.
And they're a far better team, too.
Much better team.
Well, think, and the reason why we can have this discussion that we're having right now is because we know the wage gap that exists. We know that the women make less than men when they're playing for women's national soccer. So this is the same kind of information that we need to spread to other occupations, other industries, and that's the key point out of all this.
Yeah.
Any stone we haven't turned over, Megan, that you want to make sure we at least recognize before we at least wrap up this section?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be really interested in, quite interested in speaking to business owners, and we've got a lot of the chambers of commerce that are on board, so anybody who's interested to learn more and has questions and wants to be in support of the bill, I'd love to chat with them.
And I think you had an update with the six piping flows.
No. So I have to give a quick update.
Oh, you
so
do?
Yes, I have instant breaking news here, this Megan. This just shows how on the ball our town manager, Rainey Reed, is. He actually has texted me during our show. Great guy.
Thank you for tuning in, Rainey.
Thank you for tuning in, Rainey. So there actually are 74 resident and 74 non-resident spaces that are currently available on the beach. The other thing is he's letting us know about is that the water quality remains a concern. They're having some testing done and hope to have people back in the water in the next few days. So hard at work. Progress made. Keep tuning in.
I'm impressed that he's tuned in. Now, it's either an off night for Duxbury Selectman, or he's getting ready to go in. And he's
baseball's over, and he was coaching with my husband, so baseball's over, so he's more free in the evening now.
Inside baseball going,
exactly.
Literally here, so to speak. Well, I want to thank you both for coming
in.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, we'll have you back. Yeah. We definitely will.
Great.
And Representative, as always, thank you for
a pleasure.
Because, we were going to have... And I'm just going to let this out. We were working on having Congressman Lynch on, and it was going to be a 1-2 punch. I don't know if you're going to be the left
powerful.
Or the right.
Yes,
but Congressman still working on things down in Washington could make it. So
happy to stand in for Congressman Lynch anytime.
You and Megan,
yeah, right. In. I can stand in if you ever need a female voice on this show. You, call
I think
me.
You do, Kevin. We need more female voices here. Right?
You do need actually, you do.
Okay. I'll see what Samantha Munis wants to do.
Thank you. Thank you for the pause. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Love to have you back.
Thanks.
And you know what, though? We'd have to have your mother-in-law.
You'd love having her on. Yeah.
We've already
had
her.
Oh, my God. I don't know if you can handle the two of us.
I don't know. I probably can't.
You can't. You probably shouldn't do it.
Megan, Representative, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
We're going to step aside for a moment. When we come back, we're going to speak with the fine owner of the patio at McGuigan's and McGuigan's Pub, Richard Rosen, in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back as we are awaiting some of the South Shore's fire chiefs, Chief Tim Greno, Kevin Nord from Duxbury, Scott Duffy, and Tim Harahan from East Bridgewater. Quietly come on in, gentlemen. Quietly come in and...
Quietly, please.
Quietly come in and have some pizza, courtesy of McGuigan's Pub. Of course, Tim Greno.
Just eat and be quiet.
I thought we were getting Chinese food.
Wait, does the patio serve Chinese? No, they don't. How are you, Richard?
This great,
is you,
Kevin.
You and I for one-on-one.
This is our segment.
This is our segment.
How are you tonight?
We're doing pretty good.
I must say that commercial that I just heard was pretty good.
Do you know the guy? Do you know the guy?
I do, actually. It was pretty good.
I know, we shout, gentlemen, you can come on in and sit down and have some pizza.
This just is, be quiet.
Just because Richard wants to talk. Richard Rosen.
I am the co-host, so.
It's a surprise.
Listen, I've got you guys for an hour, so you need to be careful.
Feel free. I have water for you as well. They are live. We are in the middle of a talk show.
Oh.
Chief Noy.
I'm going to keep it quiet.
Yeah. But feel free. Have some pizza. There's plenty here.
Thanks.
It's cold.
It is cold, because you should have been here an hour ago. If you will, Richard.
As we were saying?
What were we saying? So I was at the patio yesterday.
Yes.
As I texted you pictures. How are things at the new restaurant?
They're going great, thank you. Yeah, everything's good. The weather's been terrific. It allows us to keep the windows open. The food is good. So things are pretty good right now.
Quite the difference, though, from McGuigan's.
It's totally different. There is nothing the same about the two places, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
Different menu, different everything.
Yeah, I will say is that I did notice that you have specials, and one of your specials... Oh, I'm sorry. Would you? No, he wants a water. He's signaling me that he would like a water. That's Chief Tim Grinnell. Your lobster roll. You did have a special yesterday with a lobster roll.
We did.
You did. But it was different. It was on a different roll.
It's, as we said, everything
it
is different.
It was differently packaged.
As we said, everything is different from one side of the street to the other.
He's like, what do you want to talk about here? So I guess, what's new at McGuigan's?
So, what do you think is new at McGuigan's? You've been there. No, everything is great at McGuigan's. You know, it's the same Singo on Monday night and the Irish Session on Tuesday night, Half Price Pizza on Wednesday night, Entertainment Friday and Saturday night. So things are good. You know, the summer is a little bit quiet over there, July and August, because everybody's either down the Cape or down the beach in Plymouth or wherever. The patio has been quite busy, and we're starting entertainment over there. So it's been good.
Yeah, you got a little bit of media exposure at the patio. A couple of weeks ago.
We did, and that wasn't a joke when we were talking about Sam Mewis. We did a viewing party for her in-laws from Hanson.
World Cup Finals.
Yeah, and it was, we had been called and they asked for 20 people and it turned out to be 120 people. So it went pretty well. Yeah, there was several TV stations. I think WATD might have shown up.
Yep, we were there.
So it was good.
Well, what's that like to be able to get exposure like that? And knowing that the Mewis family was like, hey, let's go there.
It was really nice. They needed a place. You know, the Johnsons are from Whitman, and they needed a place. They wanted a place where the whole family could get together. So we were able to provide it. And they came in with a lot of people. We were packed. You couldn't get in there. So it was fun.
What's that?
Were you over occupancy?
No, we weren't over occupancy. We don't know, rock and see.
Well, I do know that I did notice some changes to the patio menu. Some new things that you have added.
So we've changed the menu a couple of times since we opened.
Yeah, you don't you don't stand pat.
Well, you know, you can't. As you and I have talked about many times, we added a salmon dinner and we added a couple of different sandwiches.
Scampi. Shrimp scampi.
That's one of the, shrimp scampi. And we have a chicken masala now. We're fortunate that we have... some really good chefs in there now that came from some other places that closed. So things are going pretty well.
I will say the one thing that seems to be the buzz these days, and when we go there, and I've been there a number of times, the missus can't order off the menu other than getting the Beyond Burger. This is like the rage. If you could explain what that is.
So it is a plant-based burger. It has no meat in it. And it is the rage. It is the rage all across the country. I think that they actually just announced. They just did an IPO.
IPO, yeah.
And I guess it was pretty well received. But it's a plant based burger, and people are raving about it. I may not try it, but my daughter says it's terrific as well. And I know that your Sandy loves it. You know, but it's funny, she gets the same thing every time she comes. It's like you get into the habit, you go to a restaurant, you order something and you like it, you always get it. So it's always the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how attentive you are. You're like a pinball.
you bounce from table to table to see how people are doing. And then if you're not in the patio, you're over at McGuigan's. You're very attentive as to what's going on.
Well, what I am,
how is the meal? Is it okay? What do you think?
Well, what I am is the chief schmoozer. I'm the schmoozer in charge, which is what I do best. I mean, the last thing that anybody wants is me cooking their food. Or I do make a pretty good cocktail, though, huh, Chief?
Cocktail sauce?
So, it's probably not the right time to talk about that.
Probably not.
No.
As we digress. I mean, it's important to be seen as well. In a small town and a small business, people like to see the owner. And I spend a lot of time there. My daughter is doing an amazing job running both places, and it's good.
Yeah, we saw Danielle yesterday as well. It's like she 7 days a week, no rest.
No.
Very busy, and I think I saw Kathy bounce out at one particular time from McGuigan's and pop over and see how things were going as well.
She probably did. Yes, that's what we do.
Is it, I mean, have you noticed any kind of a difference as to the number of folks who are attending? I mean,
so here's what's crazy is, so the pub has been there 9.5 years, and I know 95% of the people that come in there. The patio, I don't know 95% of the people that come in there, and that's exactly what we wanted. You don't know if it's really going to happen when you do it, but that's what's happened, and it's an entirely different crowd. And I'm finding now that after a couple of months, you know, the old regulars still want to go to the pub, and you know, they'll try the patio, and I think they feel like they're cheating on the pub, so they go back over there. And it's literally a whole different crowd.
You get kind of like a hipster crowd. I saw you get like a younger demographic who really like it. They like the open windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, the liquor is actually different. We talked about that too, and it's the tequilas, the bourbons, the whiskeys, which is what the young people are looking for. Yeah,
it's funny you mention it, because I like the bourbon fizz, and my waitress yesterday, she's like, what kind of bourbon do you want? I'm like, I know I've been here a dozen times before, and this is the first time somebody's asking me what type of bourbon do I want.
Yeah,
we
have several different kinds of bourbon, and because that's, you know, you have to keep up with the times, and that's what people want.
Yeah, it's just like surprised me. But I didn't realize it was like a sliding scale for the different types of bourbons. I mean, she could be bringing me out a $20 drink, and it's, you know, you got a high-end bourbon that you pop in it. Not that I would mind.
Well, they did, I hope. Right?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
No. Like, middle of the road.
Yeah.
It's middle of the road. Wasn't too bad. But I definitely enjoyed it. But it's very interesting knowing that you have been so successful. First starting out with McGuigan's, 10 years ago, right?
Almost
10 years, and now you get the patio right next door. Not many people would be able to accomplish that.
And you know the history of that property, right? Have I told you the history of that property?
No, but I have a funny feeling you're going to tell us.
Well, it's funny that you should ask, because that particular parcel where the patio is now located belonged to my father's uncle from 1920 to 1960, and it was the home of Rosen Furniture. So when I was a little kid and used to go in there, it was a massive building. It was three stories and it was jam-packed with furniture. Now, they sold it in 1960 to this guy who had an electrical supply business there. And it burnt down in 1974. You know, they didn't have the expertise that they have now.
You watch that language when you get fire chief.
Well, you know,
you said burnt down. They all looked out.
It was another great save.
Pizza, right?
the foundation was in perfect condition when they were done, but it was the times were different. So it burnt down in 1974. So over the next couple of decades, being in the real estate business, I tried to buy that vacant trash strewn lot, and the guy wouldn't sell it, as did some other people. The guy wouldn't sell it. So now comes 2007, 2008, when I had bought the building across the street, I wanted that lot. So I went to the gentleman, he was still alive, he was elderly, to see if he would sell it, and he didn't want to sell it. So shortly thereafter, he passed away. And I seriously don't think he was buried yet when I received a call from his daughter wanting to know if I wanted to buy the lot. So that's what happened. So I knew, so I bought it and made it a parking lot. And but I knew that a big building could fit on that lot, and a lot of people were doubting
what the heck I was they were questioning what I was doing when I was building the patio. It came out pretty good. The only problem I had was with the fire department and the sprinkler system, but other than that, it was fine. And I still don't know how, you know, if it's all steel and glass, what's going to burn, but yeah, it was the only issue that I had was with the chief, so...
Maybe we can get you two one-on-one to talk about this sometime.
No, I'm done talking to him about it.
Okay.
So.
This pizza's cold.
You be quiet.
The food critic is here. So I think the next thing you're probably going to look to do with the patty is entertainment. I think that's because you've added desserts.
So, no, the next thing that we're doing is brunch.
Oh.
So
I love brunch, right after church.
We are doing a Sunday brunch.
Bring my dad over there.
10 to 2. We're starting in about 4 weeks. It's not going to be a buffet. It's a...
You're going to have a Bloody Mary bar?
We are going to have a Bloody Mary bar and a mimosa bar. We're going to have both. Danielle is actually working on both of those.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
That's fantastic.
Because we've already done entertainment.
Okay.
So we had to move beyond the entertainment.
Okay.
And so they're formulating the menu as we speak. I actually sent two of the cooks to a local restaurant for breakfast. I said, I'll pay the bill. I want you to go check out the home fries because that's what I want for home fries. Don't you be rattling off any names either, Chief.
No, your grandson wants pancakes.
Fine. I actually saw him ride by the restaurant, I think, yesterday.
We're going to have pancakes, so we'll take care. We'll have blueberry pancakes for him.
For Tim?
For little Tim.
Yeah. Next fire chief.
The grandson I have, you know, don't have is his kid. So, good actually saw him today.
Website, if folks want to find out more and stay on top of some of the things that you're doing in the menu. And again, I'm working my way around the patio menu. Like I said, I had the fish tacos yesterday. Fantastic.
So you're going to have to come in a lot more because there's a whole bunch of things in the menu.
I got time.
It's the patio at McGuigan's.com.
Okay.
And McGuigan'sPub.com.
Had the fried cauliflower, really liked it. Oh, you had like a chili, chili sauce.
So good.
It's like a chili cheese sauce. It's really good.
You got to try the lobster legs too.
I've had them.
Lobster legs are the best.
The lobster legs are good. Yeah, the fried cauliflower is pretty good too.
Well, yeah, we'll have to. Has everybody here had a chance to sample the patio at McGuigan's?
I like the flatbread.
Do you like the flatbread? We'll have to get more when we get the. Now, are we missing a chief right now?
Yeah.
Right. Who's Chief Reed?
No, that was the last time we had a fire chief.
Reardon. Well,
I brought a couple extra pizzas, thinking he was going to be here. hope he's not listening.
I hope he is.
Let's do this. Let's step aside. Anything you want to say in closing, Rich?
I just want to say thank you for allowing me to co-host again. It's been way too long. And I'm glad that we have local fire chiefs here tonight because...
Well, I knew this would thrill you to be able to kind of sit in and be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I have some questions written down I want to ask them, so...
Okay.
But thank you for allowing me to co-host again.
We'll have to make sure we vet those out there in the commercial, guys. Make sure they're up to snuff. We'll step aside, and when we come back, we are going to kick off our second annual South Shore Firefighter Summit for this little conversation about the fire service... Much more coming up in just a few moments. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
I'm Peter Brown with Tiny & Sons Auto Glass, asking you to support my friends at the Talking Information Center, a nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio station on the South Shore serving the blind and the print disabled population of Massachusetts. For $100, you can purchase a limited edition raffle ticket to win up to $10,000 in cash. Only 300 tickets will be sold, and six people will win. To get yours and support the amazing team at Talking Information Center, visit ticnetwork.org or call 781-834-4400.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back for hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Hey, just a quick tease for next week. If you're a fan of the show Naked and Afraid, we have Nicole Terry, who's going to be joining us. She'll be here in studio, and I think we're going to have Shane Lewis also, who is on that program. No worries. They'll be fully dressed. Okay. But we will have them in studio. We're also working on having Congressman Lynch also join us. So that'll be a fantastic show. But this is a great conversation that we are going to look to have with... Well, right now we have three fire chiefs working on a... We're working on a fourth one, are we?
No.
Okay. We have... The no was Whitman Fire Chief Tim Grinnell. Next to him is Rockland Fire Chief Scott Duffy. And next to him is Kevin Nord, Duxbury's Fire Chief. And actually, he has... doesn't he have a beefier title? Isn't he... Who is the head of the Massachusetts fire chiefs or the county? Is that
it was Chief Grinnell?
It was Grinnell.
Chief Grinnell was the president.
It was Chief Grinnell. They got sick of him, and
yeah. you aged out, right?
I aged out.
Yeah, you had 1 year term.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I guess that's what I put on here. Sure.
Yep. You did a very good job.
Yeah, we actually covered it. Get some video of it. Very nice.
Chief Harron from East Bridgewater was supposed to be with us, but he announced to us 2 years ago he was putting in a new in-ground pool and he's going to have a pool party and everything. We've yet to see it, so I'm assuming he's belly up in the pool right now.
Could be busy still working on it.
Yeah.
Cleaning it for us.
Yeah.
They're right near your mouth. So I had a conversation with Chief Reno a couple of weeks ago because the last time we were here... Actually, Chief Nord, you might have been here for that
one. I was.
So you're a repeat offender, which is awesome. But we thought we'd get the fire chiefs together, and I let Chief Grinnell handpick some of the finest chiefs on the South Shore. He said it was very tough to narrow it down to just four people because he feels that basically everybody here on the South Shore is fantastic. It was really hard, but like they say in Men in Black, you're the best of the best of the best. But no, we're here to kind of talk a little bit about some of your concerns, talk about some of the things that you deal with as department heads. Whether it's fire prevention, talking about mutual aid, maybe even the mobilization of a technical group,
rescue team.
I know there's one here on the county that's been mobilized from time to time.
Yep.
It sounds to me that maybe it might be a good conversation to have about having one that is across the that can work across the country, the state.
That's under development, and we've been working very hard with that. To get all areas of Massachusetts up to a standard.
We should probably talk a little bit about mutual aid as well, I think. And I think it's understated how important mutual aid is, and maybe to the folks who listen at home, maybe they don't understand the dynamics of what you each as individuals go through when an alarm is rung, and depending on how fast a fire spreads, depending on what you have for apparatus and who you might need to call in, the importance of mutual aid. Chief
Mutual aid is extremely important. Town of Rockland, we only have six personnel on duty at a time, really just getting one hose in service at a fire may take five or six personnel, it's definitely a needed service, mutual aid. We all work together. We all pretty much have the same staffing. And we're at the point where even when we get a call for a reported fire, we're not even there yet. We're asking for mutual aid to assist us, get them there as quickly as possible.
Mutual aid is used every day, like across the Commonwealth, but more importantly, in Alec from the county. as does Rockland. Whitman runs 6 firefighters like per shift. We can handle 2 calls at the same time. After that second call, which routinely happens, we're going to our neighbors. We're going to Hanson, we're going to Abington, and we're going to Rockland, East Bridgewater, and they're back at us. So it's not uncommon for my ambulance to be over, say, in East Bridgewater, and Abington's ambulance over in Whitman, and it's a necessary evil. It's used every single day, but that's how we service our taxpayers as well as we do.
Richie? So as a former selectman going back quite some time, I understand the importance of mutual aid and the intermunicipality agreements and stuff. Nowadays, it's even more important because these guys, they're fire departments, but they really are emergency medical technicians, and that's, I would guess, you know, I'll ask you in a minute what the percentages of your calls break down between medical and fire. My guess is it's a lot more medical. So when you're only running 6 guys in each town and you've got 2 ambulances out, I don't want to be the guy having a heart attack when there's no ambulances in Whitman. And if it wasn't for mutual aid, it'd be pretty ugly out there right now. What are the percentages, Chief Greno, of
in the town of Whitman?
Yeah.
64% of what we do is EMS work.
What about you, Chief?
77% is medical.
Really?
Okay.
Wow.
Chief, yeah, we're about 70. Wow, and you got to understand, that, and the viewers need to understand that when you commit an ambulance to a transport, you are getting a revenue from it. But nonetheless, those 2 people, if it's staffed with 2, and sometimes it has to upstaff to 3, you lose them for anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. So they've left town. So you don't have those people there to rely on for your other calls.
You know, he talks about the revenue. The ambulances bring in a lot of money to the communities, and it's well needed. I remember a long time ago, we had a former fire chief that retired. Should I tell the story to me?
It has nothing to do with me.
I'm not mentioning any names.
Yeah.
That actually wanted to privatize the ambulance. After this guy had been chief, on the way out the door, he wants to privatize the ambulance. He was no longer chief when he decided to do that, and he convinced a select person to look into it. And I'm going to tell you, I was totally outraged. I spent 4 days of my life going back and looking at every penny that the ambulance had generated, and we hadn't been in business that many years as an ambulance service, and found out that it was the most profitable and it was the most worthwhile service that the town offered. I mean, and it's still the same in all these towns, but ultimately it was not privatized.
Is it accurate to say that Duxbury, Rockland, and Whitman all have their own ambulances? You don't actually have a Brewster privatized per se.
Pretty much it's all fire-based EMS in Plymouth County anyways. There's a few communities that contract the service out, Brockton and Plymouth, for instance.
And, urban center like that, I could say.
Yeah, and usually they're contracted out in areas where there's a demand, where there's other hospitals, where that private entity can make some money transporting, just in between at the facility type transfers. You have a couple of departments. I think one agency down Southern Plymouth County is still run by law enforcement, and you have another entity, Carver, which is Third Service Municipal. But for the most part, it's fire-based EMS, and it's all ALS, Advanced Life Support, paramedic level.
It's interesting that Richard brings up the fact that, maybe a retired fire chief mentioned about broached the idea of privatizing, but it wasn't too long ago, and I want to say probably within the past year.
Oh, you're really going to bring that up?
No. Go easy now.
We shouldn't.
There was something that was mentioned in a meeting, and that it drew conversation in regards to social media, where folks were outraged that it was just the mere thought or talk about privatizing was heresy, per se. And I know, I don't know exactly, even though I live in Duxbury, I don't know exactly what the expenditures are in Duxbury or Rockland, but I know that a lot, being a reporter and the stuff that I report on, I understand the importance, and I'm pretty sure it's probably something that works in each department, and that is that the monies that you may take in with ambulance revenues goes a long way in being able to replace apparatus.
Well, part of being a fire chief is being a businessman, and you know, the town that I represent is affluent, but still, nonetheless, you have to make sure you check your numbers from time to time. And the threat of private service doesn't threaten me. It makes me sharpen my pencil and make sure we're providing a good service for the money that they pay. It's cost me roughly $670,000 a year to run that ambulance, and our revenue is right around, collectibles are right around $900,000 to $1 million. So the town has a buffer there that it makes on that. But it is a service fee. It's not a tax.
Right.
You know, the person that uses the service ends up paying. And majority of that is, you know, depends on your payer mix, but the majority of that is, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Medicare, Medicaid. And then a lot of our communities, we have an aging population that's living longer that puts a greater demand on that service. And you got to continue to check the numbers and be legit with it.
Chief Duffy, do you want to weigh in on it?
No, I just think that we have to remember that, you know, we don't operate an ambulance service for a profit. Or, you know, we in the town of Rockland, you know, we definitely don't make a profit off of the ambulance. We definitely bring in monies, but not profitable. But we're there for a service for the people. We're there for to help those in town, the sick, the hurt, the injured, to get them to a hospital. That's our prime goal with the ambulance service. And also, each person on that ambulance service, or each person on that ambulance, is dual trained. They're firefighter paramedics, and you know, they could be going to a medical call on 1 hour, the next hour they could be going to a fire call. So the town gets a lot for their money for having that service.
Chief Credit?
You know, we invest a great deal of training and money into the members of the town we have. And our firefighters, like Scott says, are dual trained, and they do a phenomenal job. You know, just after that statement was that discussion was raised, like a year or so ago, I completed an in-depth study of the ambulance service in the town of Whitman. And with six people a shift, we run two advanced life support ambulances plus an ALS engine company. So what that means is that we have two paramedic staffed ambulances, and we have one paramedic staff fire truck that can start care before the mutual aid ambulance gets there for that third call, or if you're on a fire scene or something to that effect. We bring in, like Chief Nord stated, in Duxbury, we're right around the $1 million mark in revenues each year. We expend out somewhere around $580,000 to sometimes $600,000 of that account for salaries and capital equipment. The cost of running that ambulance service, if that's how we want to word it, falls below that revenue line that we bring in. So it's the best deal in town. It's making the town money. There has never been, I've been in Whitman for 34 years. We have never, I can't remember the last time that the tax base has purchased a fire truck, an ambulance, a portable radio, an SCBA, any type of capital equipment. It all comes out of the ambulance revenue account. So when people start talking private ambulance companies and get rid of the firemen and bring in a private ambulance company, they don't know what they're talking about, because the quality of service that our people give, born and raised in town, knowing its residents, dual trained, they're on a fire truck 1 minute, they're on an ambulance the next minute, because the fire calls aren't going to go away. So you still need people there to staff the fire trucks, plus the revenues, plus being able to purchase that necessary equipment. It's a win-win for everybody.
Right, and the other thing that's interesting, Rich, I'll let you jump in with a question here, is a lot of the miles that you see on an ambulance, those are hard miles. So yeah. you're turning those around a lot sooner than you normally would. While the equipment is better, it's a lot of hard miles per se.
Yeah. And you also get billable miles. I think it's $23 a loaded mile, and that's a revenue stream that you generate as well. That's part of that big number. It does depend on the quality of the vehicle you buy, but you can usually get 4 to 5 years out of those trucks. Some busier departments less, and some slower departments maybe extend that out to 7 years.
You know, it's funny, Chief Greno. Was talking about people that didn't know what they were talking about regarding the ambulance account. You know, as you know, Kevin, we had a pretty tough budget season in Whitman this past year, and I had more than one heated discussion with someone, a couple people, that didn't think that having an ambulance account was a good idea. And it's people that just have no idea what they're talking about, but they should have known better because one of them was on the finance committee. And I want to take that money and use it to give to another department, which would devastate the fire department, because the fire department, like Timmy says, that money that's generated pays pretty much for the fire department. Let me ask Chief Grunow a question, because Chief Grunow was the most recent head of FCAM, the fire chiefs in Massachusetts. What do you find the most difficult, and so he's dealt with a lot of chiefs in the last year. What do you find the most difficult issue right now facing local fire departments?
I would have to say that looking at the global picture of what we're facing and what we had to deal with, it's local politics. Local politics, and I'm going to go out on a string here and talk about social media. We have a very unique job that we run fire departments, we run EMS departments, we're emergency managers, and we have a whole host of different things on our plates. And for the most part, I think everybody does a phenomenal job across the Commonwealth. I know that we do exceptionally in Plymouth County. But when you start to get into the social media mix and the Monday morning quarterbacks and some politicians that may not be up to speed on what you're talking about and dealing with, it makes our job very difficult, because we're spending a lot of time correcting people and educating people when we need to be working and working for our taxpayers. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Yeah, and I understand it, and I get it, because I know right now that you're dealing with an issue of someone that had no idea what they were talking about, questioning the fire department on social media regarding a cooling center during this past heat wave. I mean, that's an issue that you're going to be dealing with, and it's just, you know, it's unfortunate, because as a fire chief, you have a lot more important things to deal with,
right,
than someone questioning your integrity.
Is that universal? Have any of the other, Chief Norty, have you dealt with social media issues where, you know, you got I don't want to be disrespectful, but you have some folks who it's the art of being a troll. Mm. And if you want to be able to get a rise out of people and get the most responses and get a thread going, you say something that's inflammatory.
Well, the social media is a two-edged sword. On the one hand, you have, you know, these town Facebook platforms or whatever medium they're using to drive the message in. They'll get on there and they'll interpret and opine. And as you said, that they'll make statements that aren't necessarily true, and it's unfair to us, as opposed to the old editorial section, if you will, of a newspaper where you used to see it once a week. It's now daily. But also for departments that have very aggressive public information officers and social media Twitter accounts, you can feed accurate information as fast as it gets questioned. And I've seen a drop in that in my circumstance, because we're a very heavy user for social media with Twitter and Facebook. And so we're always pushing out information about what we're doing, where we're going, and answer people legitimately.
Yeah, you guys are fantastic. Dexter does a great job.
You'll always
have
somebody
Rockland
that's sour about it. But, yep. But for the most part, a lot of departments are catching on, and they're being more aggressive with that. And I think that's society today, and that's what we have to do as chiefs, is to toot our own horn sometimes. And that might be hard. It is hard for some of us to do that, because we're not usually used to that.
Yeah, we're speaking with a couple of great fire chiefs here on the South Shore. You just heard Duxbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord. Next to him is Chief Scott Duffy from Rockland and Tim Grunow from Whitman, the fire chief. Did you want to change gears here? We were talking a little fire prevention.
Let's talk about fire prevention. So, Chief Duffy, tell us, what does Rockland offer in the way of fire prevention
programs? I feel we have one of the best fire prevention programs.
I wouldn't expect you to say that you thought Duxbury did.
I know, exactly. No, we're lucky enough to have
an 8-alarm fire.
Two full-time staffing, staffed positions, day positions. The deputy fire chief is the head of fire prevention in town. And we also have a fire prevention officer. Whether it's captain or lieutenant is dependent upon the next upcoming officer. But, you know, I mean, everything from smoke detector inspections when you sell a house, which is required by law, to just going out and answering any question or answering any question somebody has coming in, you know, we have no problem doing that. You know, simple, you can't, how many times somebody comes in and says, you know, it may not be an issue, but we have this in the neighborhood at the house, what do you think? And the staff is very well versed. You know, they've been trained fire prevention officer online level and then fire prevention officer one level through the Department of Fire Services. So, yeah, I'm very proud of our fire prevention office right now.
And fire prevention comes in two flavors. It's the educational component, and I think all the departments in Plymouth County do great work in that area. I think it's every firefighter's job to profess, you know, safety points to children, adults, college kids, and the other component of that is code enforcement, getting out in the street, you know, checking the codes, doing your quarterlies, your inspections, and things like and such as that.
You know, Chief Greno and Whitman, I mean, other than we refer to it as when he sends his fire prevention guys out, we refer to it as they go out and terrorize the villages.
Yeah.
But Chief, explain to us what we do in Whitman.
I'm actually troubled to say that as part of this last budget operations and the budget reductions, we eliminated the fire prevention officer. So all that we're basically doing in town right now is smoke detector inspections for the passing of our papers when you purchase a home, sprinkler and plan reviews for new developments or our buildings, and those type of inspections which are in front of us and on the table and need to be accomplished in order to help our taxpayers and the builders move forward. Like anything else is pretty much pushed on the back burner because the shift commanders just don't have the time to do what the full-time fire prevention officer was doing, and he was reduced because of budget reduction. So,
you know, that's another thing I see is the administrative side of the house a lot of times doesn't get funded. You know, the suppression side of the house is very busy. You try to take those guys and utilize them on the administration side, code enforcement, fire prevention, education. There's a gamut of things that we'd like to all be doing in the area of you know, making the citizens safer, but we just can't. And some of us are fortunate enough, as Scott said, in Rockland, he's got some daytime staff, but that's few and far between. And you know, it's a business, and I look at it that way sometimes. And people come in and they want their permit, and they're entitled to that, and they want their inspection that follows up with that permit being issued, and sometimes we don't always get out there to get those done.
That's a good point, Kevin. Is we have to remember that, you know, the typical business people we deal with are 9 to 5, 8 to 6, and you know, the construction workers that are coming in to get permits, or engineers are coming in to get plans reviewed, and often towns just don't have the staff available at the hours to meet with them. We're fortunate enough that we can meet those conditions, but many don't.
But is fire prevention strictly something that's budgeted? Is it strictly that's part of your annual budget, or is it something that will you think down the road have to be supplemented with grant money?
When you prioritize your budget each year, you know, there's some things that have to go, and obviously you're not going to take firefighters off the ambulance or off the engine to respond to calls, and so where do you cut? You cut training and you cut code enforcement, fire prevention. We do try to seek grants to make up for that loss. We're not always successful. We have a talented group across the county that each September, you know, it's fire prevention month in October, and they hit the schools and try to get K-6 anyways. But it should be expanded further than that.
Richie?
I'd like to ask the chiefs about storm readiness programs. Chief Greno, you want to talk about what you do and what the department does for, you know, this is a good time to discuss this after what just happened down in down the Cape,
right?
And the damage that they incurred.
Well, it is hurricane season.
It is hurricane season.
Yeah.
It is hurricane.
It's also Shock Week, but
it is Shock.
So, just in case you were curious,
there's a few out there in Duxbury Bay.
And Piper Plovers on the beach still.
Yeah, well, there's only six of them right now.
There's only six.
I think
of them.
The beach is open. Yeah.
It's hurricane preparedness month. MEMA sent out the advisory a few weeks ago to get us all up to speed. But there's a lot of planning and a lot of logistics that goes in. I know in the town of Whitman when something that Mother Nature is going to deal us is approaching. You know, if we're looking at like hurricanes, you know, what's the path and what's the impact? If we're looking at like snowstorms, is it wet snow or is it light snow? Because if it's light snow and there's no water factor, like with no winds, give me 4 feet if you want. It's not going to affect my operations. If you give me 6 inches of like heavy wet snow and high winds.
We all have weatherman degrees here.
Yeah, it's going to shut us down.
Weather person now.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the hurricanes, I think Chief Nord would probably be more on the hot seat on that because he's right on the coastline and he gets hit pretty hard with all types of events. So
I think it's preparedness. You know, we try to push that out again through social media, being prepared, having that go bag, you know, making sure you have a phone list that isn't on your phone. So if your phone dies, you know how to contact people with phone numbers, medications, having them available, and having those go-to places that you can seek shelter outside the area that storm may be bearing down on, whether it's a nor'easter or a hurricane or in the case of the Cape, you know, these recent tornadoes. And I think we have to rely on people being prepared to kind of help themselves for the first few hours of any emergency because, you know, we become overwhelmed, and obviously with trees, you know, we can't get around as quick as we could with trees in the street and lines down and things like that. So it's a big message to have the citizen be prepared and ready and help out other neighbors and be watchful of the older adults that might be in their neighborhood and children.
You got it a little bit more difficult for you, Chief Nord, as to, and not to say it's any more difficult for Chief Duffy or Chief Greno, but you've got, it's heavily wooded in some parts of Duxbury. Then you also have the coast. You have to worry about if there's any flooding, depending on the strength of the storm.
Yeah, and that's where you really get into what Tim was saying about monitoring the weather. You know, is the wind going to be out of the northeast? And if so, how's that impact my shoreline? And that's no different from Plymouth, Scituate, and Hull. You know, what are our low-lying areas? We know where they're going to flood. We'll put out a voluntary evacuation. You know, people generally heed those and get out of that area. It's tidal. And then, you know, the rest of the town is hit with high winds. And I know Duxbury, anyways, is known for, like, Tree City. They don't want to cut a branch or a tree and keep it, you know, keep them up as long as they can. I did see quite a few cranes throughout town after that bad storm a year ago where people were taking trees down, you know, because of the damage and the havoc that it wreaked. But,
you know, Kevin, you started this segment talking about mutual aid.
Mm.
And just to show you how well-oiled that the fire service in Plymouth County is and how well that the fire chiefs look out for like each other and work on like in our partnership. That last storm, I think it was the March storm order, Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a storm like going on, we all have radios in our emergency operations center. We all have radios in like in our cars, and they scan like everybody else around us. We generally take those radios off a scan because we're concentrating on what's going on in our own town at that point in time. Whitman, we weren't getting things too bad. Duxbury was getting clobbered. So a quick phone call, like back and forth, and next thing you know, there's a structural task force, which is a group of, I think, 5 engine companies, is now deployed from Whitman and Hanson and Bridgewater, moving to Duxbury because of what's going on down there, and they needed the help. That's in-county help, that's our mutual aid, you know, that's what we do.
And that's something I think that all Plymouth County chiefs are very good at. We can kind of get beat down by a storm and we get into our silo and we're just kind of worried about what's going on in Duxbury. And I think when I'm in Duxbury getting hit hard, or I'm sure if it's Scituate or Plymouth, we're not listening to other towns, and these guys are sitting there listening to me get hammered. And so they give me a call because I'm thinking they're getting hit as hard as we are, and they're not in this particular case, and so that's why we always kind of watch each other's backs and show up at their fires and what can I help you with, and you know, start to expand the command and the control of larger fires and stuff like that. So
it's a brotherhood.
It is.
It's a brotherhood.
Absolutely, and it's
dysfunctional at times, but it's a brotherhood.
It stretches statewide too. That same storm about 10 o'clock at night, you know, the coast was still getting hit pretty hard. And, you know, things had settled in Rockland. We had no power, but we, you know, we were listening to the coast, and nobody had any mutual aid to give at this, at the point in time, 10 o'clock at night. The state does have a fire mobilization plan that we reached out to, and we were able to get, I think it was like 12 apparatus from the metro Boston area. Wow. Cambridge, Boston, Somerville, Milton, all the way down to Weymouth, were able to supply apparatus for the South Shore. In event of a larger emergency. So, you know, it's just not countywide either, but it's statewide that, you know, we have a very robust mutual aid system.
And I'd just add to that, that we're very conscientious of the mutual aid because we live by it, and we have to because we're doing more with less. But at the same time, we're very sensitive to abusing it. And sometimes the politics get in the way, and we're asked by... you know, some of the financial groups in the town, can't you rely more on mutual aid? And no, we can't, because each town is trying to do its fair share of its own call volume, and we can't abuse that at all, because that's taboo, you know, so...
So while it's good in one vein, it's seen as, you know, as
a quick fix. We don't have to staff or buy or purchase, you know, something in our own community, because you can rely on somebody else.
All right, why don't we step aside just for a moment? We're going to take one last a break, but when we come back, I would like to touch upon the statewide technical rescue mobilization effort, and maybe even touch upon opioids or whatever you chiefs want to kind of wrap up with. We'll run the field with this. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny & Sons, Route 53, Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme, gimme that ding.
So gimme that ding. Tiny & Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9watd.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And welcome back to Monday Night Talk. We have with us tonight three area fire chiefs, as well as Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk, is here as well.
Thank you.
We have with us Chief Tim Greno from Whitman, Chief Scott Duffy from Rockland, and Chief Kevin Nord from Duxbury. We have another 25 minutes to go, and there's a lot of things that we want to go over, including we want to talk about the technical rescue team in Plymouth County. But before we get to that, I just want to say that I have had the opportunity over the last 30-something years to see how this whole mutual aid thing has grown and how the fire services have grown. And I'll tell you, the people in listening land out here ought to be pretty proud of the fire services for what they've accomplished and what they do. And you talked about a brotherhood, but they certainly work well together under the municipal agreements and stuff. And it is pretty amazing, because I can't think, and you know, it's funny, Chief Greno and I had a discussion this morning before he knew I was going to be the co-host tonight about being prepared for different stuff. And
I don't think that there is anything that these guys aren't prepared for or have trained for. And it's to their credit that things run as well as they do.
Well, if we find something, we know who to call, though, too.
That's right.
Especially for the food.
So with that being said, I want to turn this over to the host, Kevin Tocci.
I think we should touch upon... the one thing I remember in regards to when you talk about technical rescue was it was a number of years ago down in Plymouth. You might remember this, Chief Nord, when we had an excavator get stuck in a sand pile.
South Plymouth.
And, yeah. South Plymouth. And the Plymouth County Technical Rescue team was activated to go in and pull that individual out and save them. And there are other instances, but that's the one thing that sticks out in my mind, not just because we reported on it here, but it was just one of those things where you heard that the special team was going down to kind of help out this situation.
Yeah, and I suppose just for the listeners, a technical rescue is an advanced art, if you will, of, you know, specialized rescues. You know, every firefighter stepping off the truck doesn't necessarily have the skill set, although he could, the training and the specialty tools. And it would be astronomical for every community to be prepared for, you know, someone stuck on a radio tower 300 feet up in the air, or somebody trapped in a vault or a confined space, or someone in an excavation or in a trench and the trench collapses, and how do you get them out? What type of tools? I mean, you know, we have hoses, ladders, axes, you know, and jaws. We can do a pretty good job day to day. But for those specialty things, building collapses, things like that, being able to search with canine dogs and search cameras and listening devices, we were pretty... We probably started one of the first teams in the state in Plymouth County, and it's flourished since then. You know, under Tim's leadership as FCAM president, he wholly supported it, and we're starting to see teams throughout metro Boston area, the Northeast, Central Mass, as well as Western Mass, and we're taking those Homeland Security funding dollars and writing proposals and being quite successful with it. But we did start here in Plymouth County back when they put the tunnel under Route 3 for the railroad. It was back then. And we had a group of guys get together, and after that project was over, wanted to stick with it. And it was something that I was very much in favor of and enjoyed it. And so through the years and my advancement in rank, I've been able to keep it going to a state-of-the-art team. And the team did deploy, by the way, to North Carolina in an EMAC, which is an emergency management action compact, and they deployed for 10 days down in North Carolina with the team. So it's a notable team, and it's a great group of guys, about 50 guys. And again, it's having that special person, special training, and special tools.
So that strictly it is that the individuals that are part of the team have special training. You can't just be, say, I volunteer, I want to be a part of it, and I work for the fire service.
You start off with that interest, you know, I want to belong, and we have basic levels of training that they have to succeed at before they're made a full team member, and then from there it gets expanded, and we just continually try to run exercises and have the guys. It's about 50 persons on the team. We've grown into Southeastern Mass, where Barnstable and Bristol and Norfolk have spun up teams. We have a dive team and surface water rescue personnel as well. In fact, we just deployed, Plymouth County deployed over to Canton for what was believed to be a lost swimmer. They do travel around a bit because of their expertise. And like I said, it's a great savings for the communities to have that, because it's a regional asset. And the guys on the team are I think, the best of the best of the firefighters.
What would it take to have a statewide team? Or is it best served to have regions or county teams?
I think it's best served to for deployment purposes to have a smaller, more agile team.
For efficiency?
Yeah, we can usually get to a scene within 20 minutes and staff up within the hour. And then, you know, there's each area of the state is different, and its demographics as well as its terrain. Western Mass, you have a lot of cliffs, a lot of mountain-type situations, a lot of river-type stuff. You know, Metro Boston area, you have a lot of more building type related issues for rescues from heights and things like that. So, you know, you train up to that level in which the area you're in, but it is universal. We've been able to standardize the equipment list and standardize the training so that, you know, a technician from the Northeast, Essex County, could play down in Plymouth County and have no problem at all working side by side. One of the other areas that we're developing is a HART team, a helicopter aerial rescue team, and we've paired up with the National Guard out of Joint Base Cape Cod. This is a beta test group. We've got 10 or 15 guys that are going to be able to be deployed by helicopter and be, you know, lowered into water-type evacuation areas and so on. And that's underway, and that's being led by Deputy Chief O'Brien out of Hanson Fire. So, again, we're always pushing the envelope, trying to do more, trying to do better.
So let me ask you all as chiefs, so how do you... What activates this team? How do you decide? Is it something that... Amongst the chiefs, if you're a chief going, oh, this is a situation, do they contact you, Chief Nord, or Chief Greno? Do you have someone?
Well, first off, Kevin, just so you know, Chief Duffy and I are both on the fly list for the helicopters. Chief Radin is not. Okay. For obvious reasons.
Boy, I hope that wasn't
it. Chief Radin or Chief Nord?
Chief Radin.
Okay.
No, Chief Nord is on the list.
Okay. Man down. He's not even here.
Was there a reason Protocols. That he wasn't invited?
No, he was invited. He
was
declined.
He was just on the outside of the four-man roster.
I'm sure he's home listening to us right now.
Oh, boy. So, but Andy, Chief Radin does a great job with our command and control. And he's our leader with our incident management team, incident support team, we call it. And when you have large events and you have multiple people, you got to have the management side of the house to keep everybody going in the right direction for efficiency and duplication and getting the resources in that they need. And Scott's very handy with that as well. But how you request the team is the incident commander, the chief, you know, whoever it is at the scene. Sees that this is a little bit above and beyond what they're capable for, so they call into Plymouth County Control, which is our mutual aid dispatch, and they make a request for the team. The team gets toned out, it gets paged, it shows up on their smartphones, Alpha Pager, where to go, what to do. If they're on duty, they deploy from their stations. We have strategically located equipment caches around the county, so those would deploy to that site. And then the rest of the team, if they're off duty, you know, basically drops what they're doing and goes in that direction and staffs up the team and starts to you know, do a an incident action plan with it and getting their hands dirty.
Chitavi, have you ever had to ask for a team to be deployed at any?
A couple of times.
We've had, I think, in the past 3-4 years, we've had them out in Rockland 3 or 4 times, all for water incidents, 2 vehicles into Reed's Pond. One possible missing swimmer down by the Willow Pond area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very simple. You just pick up the phone and you call and you ask for them. I think, you know, what people have to understand is that, you know, firefighters have become kind of those problem solvers. If you're not quite sure what's going on, who do you call? You call the fire department. And the firefighters in every community, but, you know, especially Rockland, you know, they get there, they can... 99.9% of the time solve whatever problem is presented to them. It's that 0.1% of the time that, you know, they're sitting going, well, this is beyond our capabilities. And that's where the tech rescue team comes in.
And I know you have a couple of members who are in your department, Chief Greno, that when the team is called, they're deployed. What's that like to have a couple of your members be deployed if needed to be a part of the team?
Well, it's an honor. It's an honor because you know that we're like paying our part to keep this team up and functional and operational, and we're providing a service to the residents of Plymouth County that you know their hometown like may not have. You know, right now we have the capability that we store the tractor trailer truck. It's a structural collapse truck for the tech rescue team, and we store the moist unit, which is the major operations incident support truck for the team, along with some other anecdotal like types of equipment. So Whitman is very involved. We support the team 100%, and you know, we've been talking for 45 minutes, and the funny thing about this show this evening is that we're talking about the fire service in Plymouth County, and we're talking about mutual aid, and we've talked about everything else that we do accept our core mission of firefighting. Because the fire service is
one-stop
shopping.
The floor is yours, sir.
Because the fire service is one-stop shopping. You have an issue, you dial 911 because you need somebody to come there and help you. And it's generally the fire department that you call and we come out and help you. And we do everything from tech rescue to trench collapse to dive teams.
Social
services right down the line. And for 47 minutes, not one discussion on how hot is it to stretch a hose line inside a house and what to vent a roof and stuff like that. And that's a credit.
It was kind of what I was leading to at the beginning when I was asking the percentages of fire versus medical, because nowadays you really have fires. I mean,
right.
In the town of Whitman, we had, what, four or five? You'll say it was many more, but the Much fact more. Is it was only a few actual working fires last year. I mean, and I guess that would go for all of us because the service has changed so much that although you're called firemen and firefighters, you do very little firefighting. I mean, you know, and it wasn't that many years ago that you guys didn't have ambulances. I remember the day when, if you were in a car accident, the police cruiser would show up and it was like a Dodge station wagon and you were lucky to live to get to the hospital because the cop would throw you in the back of the station wagon, take you to the hospital.
That was long time ago.
Wasn't that long.
Now you got basic life services, advanced life service ambulances that are have specialty stretchers and rescue. But it's fantastic.
But with the fire, and obviously I'm not a fireman, but with the advent of having to sprinkle buildings, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, the construction materials, it's actually reduced by a lot the amount of working fires that you really have.
But it has given us some new challenges with those different construction techniques that are being used today. Number one is lightweight construction, and we could spend another hour just about that and how buildings are basically big envelopes now, and they cold the heat in, so it makes it more difficult for the firefight, and the buildings collapse sooner because it is made of lightweight construction. And then you do have so much automatic alarms now, so you're getting that early initial arrival when before it wouldn't be noticed until someone was driving by and there'd be flames shooting out a window. But the Northeast is predominantly known for its old wooden structures as well as its mill types, and we have so many in our communities. So even though we do so much EMS and tech rescue and all these other things and pub ed, we still have to be prepared for that big firefight. Rockland alone had one 2 years ago, which took two years ago. You know, and maybe 30 mutual aid companies, assisting them with that. And everybody has to stay safe and know what they're doing. So it's few and far between, and it puts a heavy emphasis on us to keep guys trained up.
And if there weren't sprinklers, you guys would probably still be putting the fire out at the old Bostonian building that had an actual working fire last week.
The other night, yeah.
Did the sprinklers put the fire out?
And as good as sprinklers are, you know, we're still running into roadblocks with lobbyists on the construction side and the development side of buildings.
They want to save costs.
They want to save costs. You know, I mean, we should start to see sprinklers in one and two family homes.
All my buildings are sprinkled.
Does anybody know any local builders or real estate agents that we could discuss this with?
All mine are sprinkled. I can tell you that right now.
I was trying not to look at them as I was saying this. But, you know, we do have a long way to go.
I do want to kind of go in a different direction just for half a second. What got you gentlemen all wanting to be? Was it lineage? Did you have family members, or what was it about the fire service that made you want to not only get involved but also climb the ladder and ultimately be the head of the department? Chief Moore?
Well, I always wanted to be a chef. I don't know, something happened along the way.
I need some help.
But
he does.
Good
job.
At the firehouse.
You never told us that.
But that was about it. I think it's public service. You know, my father was a teacher, and he gave a lot of his years to educate the youth in Scituate where I grew up, and I kind of wanted to do that in his footsteps, but I think paramedicine was probably a big draw for me. I liked that, and just the public service. Well, you, Scott?
Chief Tuffy.
Yeah, no, I grew up in a household with a police and fire scanner. You know, my parents would take me to the fires. You know, no firefighters in the family. Just something that I'd wanted to do since I was five. Pictures of me playing with fire trucks as a child. You know, as I got older, I wanted to be a newscaster, and then I wanted to fly, you know, jet fighters in the Navy. But the one thing that remained constant through it all was to be, you know, a firefighter, and that's what eventually I became. Now, as to climb the ladder and to become chief, I can't necessarily say it was it was a goal or something I strive for. It just happened, and you know, you take what you get, and you do the job that you have to do.
Chief Greno.
I was basically born into it, quite honestly. My father was in Whitman for 32 years. He retired as fire chief. A lot of people don't know that my sister was a firefighter, EMT in Whitman, for probably 10 or 12 years. Her husband was a call firefighter in Whitman and was full-time in Halifax and went to Hyannis 40 years ago. I joined the call fire department at age 15 in 1985, and I've never looked back since.
I'm going to say it's a disease. You know, you can tell. So, you can tell those guys that really.
You really think it's because myself, I thought about being a firefighter. I have my uncle's a firefighter. He was a firefighter in Newton, Joe LaCroix. Mm. His father was a firefighter. My grandfather was. And I almost went that way, but Scott, I took on that role for you. I became the newscaster.
Yes, so. Thank you.
And Goose is sitting beside you.
Yeah. So,
I'm top.
But yeah, it's interesting that, you know, how the paths we take, you know.
No, I just wanted to say that.
And you wanted to be a firefighter too?
No, I did not want to be a firefighter. However, in hindsight, it's not a bad living. I mean, he's going to retire pretty quick. We're going to pay him a lot of money to stay home. I mean,
he's
so
all been
bad.
Paying into it over.
If I showed you pictures from
equal payment.
If I showed you pictures from 2008 when he went from the LT. To being top dog,
so
he had a little bit more, he had more follicles,
hair.
And he had a little less gray, and oh my God, the wrinkles, it's crazy.
So
he didn't need that social media aging app. It's happened through the job. I'm kidding.
I had the great pleasure of appointing his late father as acting fire chief in Whitman many years ago, and was on the board of selectmen when
Dick Greno.
Dick Greno.
The great Dick Greno.
He was the best. And that was during a time in the 80s when they were burning down Whitman. We had working fires every couple of nights that were arson. Mm. But I had that great pleasure to do that. And I was on the board when we appointed his sister to the Whitman Fire Department.
Fantastic.
So I have a history with him. It's not all good, but
it's
I have a history with him.
At all, no.
You know, the thing I wanted to touch upon for half a second, and I don't know what we have for time, was opioids, but I think that could be another conversation in itself, knowing that how it affects how it affects each one of your departments. I mean, recently we had information out that there's been a bit of a decline, but I would be curious if Narcan in the training of the police and fire and everybody having training to be able to assist somebody who is having an active overdose might play a role in that. And I would also probably want to get into I almost did when we were talking about ambulances and, you know, the numbers of calls that you have and what, but we don't have that data and we don't want to get into it. If you each had something to say right for the next couple of minutes here, and at least make sure you had a chance to express while you're sitting in front of the microphone, whether it's about the fire service, your department, or what it is that you do as a public servant, what would you want to say?
I know in the perspective of Rockland, you know, I'd just like to say to all the young men and women that, you know, we need firefighters. You know, just as plumbers, electricians, craftsmen are needed. Firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs are needed. It seems it's harder and harder to hire now. The lists are getting shorter. Less people are taking the civil service tests. So, you know, it's a great profession, and they're needed. So I would say, you know, if anybody's, you know, interested or any curiosity, to stop by the fire station and ask anybody. They can, you know, ask for me in Rockland, or but we need firefighters.
Is there a demographic that you would, that's preferred?
No, there's no demographic. No, okay. we you know, anybody that's just driven to do the job and is compassionate is you know male or female, you know, young or old. We need firefighters.
Is there still a call? Do you still use the
call?
Unfortunately,
we do not have a call department anymore.
Okay.
It is, you know, something that has kind of slid in the past. I would love to see a call department, though.
Okay. Chief Nord?
I think I can echo what Scott said. You know, it's talk a little bit about the call firefighting force. It's been very difficult for me to maintain a force of 10, which is what we roster. And we spend so much time and energy outfitting them and training them before we put them in harm's way. And the interest just doesn't seem like it's there anymore that it used to be. And I don't know necessarily what that's from. So we've had to rely, you know, more on career firefighters. And the job has gotten very technical. Not technical rescue, but technical, you know. I think the other aspect that's weighing heavy on us is the social issues. We're trying to make sure we're not doing repeat customers and get them the help that they need, and that's a whole another area.
Chief Greno.
They've pretty much hit the topics that I would discuss as to what we need. Chief Duffy and I are both civil service departments, which means that we hire off the statewide civil service list. Mm-hmm. And we're constantly calling at you. I'm like each other. Hey, did you interview this guy? I was supposed to, but he was a no-show. Hey, did you interview this guy? Well, yeah, but like back and forth, because the list is that small that we're all receiving the same names for
stagnant pool
jobs. Yeah,
stagnant pool of candidates. So,
yep. And part of that's the paramedicine. You know, a lot of departments.
Well, there's a duality basically to it. You're not asking them just to come in and fight fires. They need to be able to hop on an ambulance and be able to administer medical to someone.
Yeah, but back in the mid '90s, when we went through on like medical school and I think the late '80s for Kevin, it was a lot more simpler. Is probably the best way to put it. Yeah. Now there's just so much technology involved, which we're okay with because we had the base course, and then as new things came out, pulse oximetry, 12 leads, CPAP and everything else, we learned that as we went. Now these students are trying to take in like a small like MD degree in a 1 year period. It's not impossible. An easy program anymore. Yeah. It's not an easy program.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for being here this evening. It's really appreciated, and I'd like to do this.
Well, I hope it was entertaining.
I think it was.
Thank you for having us.
I hope you got a lot out of it.
And again, if there's ever a need to maybe isolate a particular conversation, we don't have to do an hour, but knowing that there's three people here, we were expecting four, but the idea is to give everybody a fair chance to be able to kind of speak on an item or an issue, and also from your particular area here on the South Shore, which is greatly, greatly appreciated. So we had a chance to speak with Fire Chiefs Tim Greno, Scott Duffy, and Kevin Nord. And Richard, thank you again for coming in.
Richard.
Thank you for the pizza.
And thank you for pizza and apps.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me again as your co-host. I think this was a really interesting hour. It was informative.
Next time, maybe if we do have one of these little forms, maybe we have it over at the patio. We do like a...
Oof.
We do like a...
I'm not sure that's such a great idea.
When do we open the phone lines? When do people call?
We can do that next time.
555-1212. That's the number
to call. Dr. Ruth.
Yeah. But no, I want to thank you all for the three of you for coming in. And I definitely want to thank Megan and Josh, Rep Cutler, for coming in, as well as Allison Sullivan. All great conversations, and yes, even you, Richard, for being the glue to this show this evening.
Well, thank you very much.
You're speaking to the
mic. Thank you very much.
All right, just want to make sure. Thank you. That's all the time we have here. Coming up, Cross Check Radio is coming up with two-time NHL hockey player, Stanley Cup champion Kevin Stevens, Andy and Alex. Stay tuned for that. And until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a great evening.